M. Jackson, W266, DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Breaking news, Lisa Marie Presley, the only child of Elvis, has died. Her mother, Priscilla, says Lisa Marie died after being rushed to a Los Angeles area hospital earlier today. Presley was at the Golden Globes earlier this week as the movie about her father was up for awards. Lisa Marie Presley was 54. Violent storms tear through the south and southeast. A large tornado has killed at least six people in Autauga County, Alabama, 41 miles northeast of Selma. CBS's Mark Strassman reports from Atlanta.
Oh, my God.
Selma, Alabama, the bullseye of a powerful tornado ripping through the city, causing major damage.
I ain't never been so scared in my life, but I was praying.
A line of large tornadoes swept through the south, touching down in central and eastern Kentucky. Roofs blown off, cars flipped on their sides, a trail of ruin. Striking in the middle of the day, causing misery in Mississippi.
Georgia's governor has declared a state of emergency. Damage has been reported west of downtown Atlanta in Douglas and Cobb counties. Wet weather will hit the West Coast again. Weather Channel meteorologist Chris Warren has the latest on the storm's weekend track.
As more rain falls across the Golden State, with a threat for flooding Saturday morning into Sunday morning from San Diego all the way up to Humboldt County and Redding and Chico, even North Bend and Brookings in Oregon.
At least 18 deaths are blamed on the string of recent storms in California. A special counsel has been appointed to investigate the handling of documents with classified markings. They were found in a previous office of President Biden's as well as his Delaware home. CBS's Adriana Diaz reports.
Garland has now appointed two special counsels in 2 months to investigate the handling of sensitive materials by the sitting president and former President Trump, who had over 300 classified documents at his Mar-a-Lago estate. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy questioned Biden's transparency.
They knew this has happened to President Biden before the election, but they kept it a secret from the American public. Now we find another location that it's at.
The president's lawyers say they have immediately turned over every classified document they have found.
Calls are growing even among some in his own party for New York Republican Congressman George Santos to resign after admitting to lying about his background during his campaign. CBS News congressional correspondent Scott McFarlane.
He came out of the gates this week with a whole bunch of bills they wanted to get a lot of attention for, on abortion rights issues, on the issue of the weaponization of the federal government, their critiques of the Justice Department. But instead of us paying attention to those bills, we're asking Republican leaders about George Santos.
On Wall Street today, the Dow closed up 217 points, NASDAQ jumped 69. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance, so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual and...
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. A man from Kenosha accused of poisoning his wife in 1998 is on trial for a second time. Mark Jensen was convicted of murder, but in 2021, the Wisconsin Supreme Court ordered a new trial. A key piece of evidence in the first trial was a letter Julie Jensen wrote. It said if anything happened to her, police should assume her husband did it. That letter will not be admissible in this trial. The U.S. House is creating a new select committee on strategic competition between the United States and China. Wisconsin Republican Congressman Mark Gallagher has been pushing for such a committee. It will look into China's economic, technological, and security advancements. It will also examine competition with the United States. In sports, the Bucks beat Atlanta last night 114-105. Marquette beat UConn last night 82-76. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. Once in a minute, Jean of Eau Claire.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get...
afternoon.
What's your mind, Andrew of Detroit?
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
Let's be honest. The National Symphony may not be in his future, but he wanted to try violin. So you said yes because you love him. And if you love him that much, love him enough to make sure he's buckled up and in the back seat. Find out more about keeping your kids safe in your vehicle at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Show him you love him. Keep him safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
The Shaw 101 FM. Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. The Shaw 101 FM. WAUK 540 AM. Waukesha's only news talk station.
Miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So you may remember yesterday we were talking about Michigan. Michigan is now my focus because Democrats did something that I don't think a lot of people thought was possible. They went and they swept everything. They got the House back, the Senate back, the governor's mansion, attorney general. They swept everything because, well, you know, Republicans put up a lot of really crazy people. And they ran on, we're going to return Michigan to the economic power. We're going to make this a working class state again. We're going to bring back reward to work. We're going to do all those things. And you know what? They got legislation already in days that's going to move in that direction. Democrats across the country, pay attention. This is what you do when they give you the keys to the steamroller. You drive it. And here to share some thoughts on what they're going to be doing here in Michigan, I've asked Michigan State Representative Jasper Martis to come talk with us. Jasper represents the 69th District in Michigan, a newly elected representative that you may remember we met on the Working Class Heroes tour in Flint. Jasper, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks so much for having me. Excited, to spread the word about what we're doing here in Michigan.
This is what Democrats need to be doing. When you get the keys, man, you drive the car.
Absolutely. You know, we went into November feeling very confident that Governor Whitmer would be reelected. Same with our Secretary of State and Attorney General. And the consensus was when it came to our state Senate and state House, been over 12 years since the House had been blue, over 40 years since the Senate had been blue, that it was possible, but it was going to be the equivalent of drawing a royal flush. And that ended up happening. And this is the first Democratic trifecta in 40 years, only the fifth time in 130 years that we've had a Democratic trifecta. And you get past 130 years in our history, you don't really want a Democratic trifecta back in the Gilded Age, right? But we have just so much opportunity. And as you said, we started session on Wednesday, and we're already getting the ball rolling, delivering on our promises that we campaigned on.
Let's talk about the big one. I've been saying this for the longest time. Democrats need to start undoing the attacks on workers and this whole no rights at work agenda. Michigan in 2012, I believe it was, like thieves in the night during a lame duck, rammed through the so-called right to work bill. And again, it's one of the reasons I'm against term limits. It's one of the reasons I'm against a bunch of things. But Michigan has been saddled with this for over a decade, and we know it's caused great harm to your state. So this I want to see being the first thing that you guys get done and making Michigan a right-to-bargain state. Where are you guys with this, and where do you see this going?
It's one of our top priorities. It was one of the things that we started out this week in my district with was bringing Joe Tate, who's our Speaker of the House, to Genesee County to meet with our building trades, our UAW, our AFL, and our AFSCME members to show that Genesee County is going to have a seat at the table. And most importantly, labor is going to have a seat at the table. And Joe had kind of sworn us to secrecy of talking about what our first bills would be. But when the folks of the building trades and UAW are asking what are our top priorities going to be, Speaker Tate said, and I said as well, look at what we campaigned on. And the first bill that we introduced on Wednesday was to repeal Right to Work and some other pieces of legislation that pertains to empowering working families. So we wanted to start out big and bold in one sense, but in another, it shouldn't have come as a surprise to anyone, because this is these are issues that we've been talking about for years, and in many cases, decades. And we're trying to just hit the ground running.
Just as it's no surprise when Republicans take control, look at Kentucky, that the first thing that they do, the first club out of the box, is to attack workers and their rights and pass these horrible pieces of legislation. It should be the opposite, that Democrats who stand up for working people, the first club out of the bag is to restore workers' rights. You know, I say all the time, and you don't have to come with me, but Republicans hate working people. Look at what they do. And here in Pennsylvania, had Doug Mastriano become governor of this state, thank goodness he didn't, the first piece of legislation they were going to pass was to make Pennsylvania a no rights at work state. Thank goodness that didn't happen. But what you're doing is exactly what the Democratic Party needs to pick up all across this country and restore workers' rights to bargain.
And we're going to put those Republicans on record when it comes to repealing Right to Work. There will be a few Republicans who come along with us to vote to repeal Right to Work. And that, you know, they are a member of a party that is designed and based in oppressing and being anti-worker. But they understand that in a state like Michigan, home of the UAW, one of the most important states when it comes to the history of labor in American history, that they're going to need to be on the right side of things. And that's the case with a lot of these initiatives when it comes to empowering workers' families. They should be non-controversial. And the reason why it's taken so long to make progress is we've had a right-wing Republican apparatus dominating our House and our Senate, and before Governor Whitmer, the governor's office, that would not allow some of these common sense things. You know, we're going to talk about repealing the pension tax and expanding the EITC, things that most folks, when you explain it to them, can agree on, but these Republicans have not even allowed them to come up to a vote. And not only are we moving in a big and bold way, we're also just going to try to do some of those smaller fixes that Democrats and Republicans should be able to agree on.
No, I want us to live in a society where, you know, Democrats are fighting for working people and Republicans don't hate working people.
Right.
I want to live in that world. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Jasper Martis. He's a Michigan State Representative representing the 69th District there. You want to check out his website, jaspermartis.com. We'll get links out on social media how you can do that. Now, you brought up a couple other things. Prevailing wage, something else we talk about quite often. I'm a huge supporter of prevailing wage laws because I know it encourages a local building trades so that you have local skilled craftspeople in your community who build the things that you need. That money that they earn, those good wages, those benefits, stay local in the community and reverberate through your community. It is good, sound policy, which is sadly why Republicans destroyed it. Tell me what you're doing to bring this back and how you're going to fix it.
Yeah, we're going to try to restore we are going to restore prevailing wage across the board. In 2019, 2020, Governor Whitmer was able to do a few changes when it came to public works projects, making sure we're protecting prevailing wage there. But there's a lot of projects, a lot of things that go on in Michigan that have still been exempted from the prevailing wage law. So we're trying to bring that back. You know, you really talked about how those good wages go back into the community. The biggest supporters of my campaign in my primary and in my general were my local building trades guys. And it was because the theme of my campaign was I'm at an age now where there's a lot of folks who are moving away from our community. They're going to other parts of the state, other parts of the country, and that hurts workers. And with a lot of my building trades friends and supporters, they have plenty of stories of living wherever they do in mid-Michigan, having to go even past Michigan to other parts of the Midwest, or one of my friends who's at IBEW, Local 948, that has gone as far as Massachusetts to get good work. And so that's great for the local corner stores and restaurants in Massachusetts, but that's not good for Flushing or Flint Township or Schwartz Creek, Michigan. So we want to institute prevailing wage across the board, kind of build on the progress Governor Whitmer was able to make a few years ago through executive order, and just make that as another pillar, you could say, of the working families agenda that we're trying to put forward.
Yeah, and the important thing is look, you know, I traveled, you know, before the election, we traveled through eight states. We traveled to a lot of places that used to be. We traveled through, you know, Toledo that used to be the glass capital. We traveled to Flint that used to have, you know, massive auto industry. We traveled through a bunch of those, Akron, you know, rubber capital. And there's a lot of rebuilding to be done. There's a lot of opportunity, but we can't do it on low wage, desperate labor. We've got to do it on high road employment that encourages families to stay local, that gives them jobs and opportunities to thrive and do better in the future. It's that snowball rolling downhill, getting bigger thing instead of, well, you know, an economy that's shrinking.
Yes. And it's not just going to be those specific policies like prevailing wage that are going to do a lot of good. We also want to make sure that those folks that are going to be making more money have more projects to work on. I'm very thankful that Speaker Tate released the committee assignments this morning, and I'm going to be on appropriations. And that was my number one ask, because we talked about this the last time I was on the show, that my only critique of the Biden administration is that they only figured out how to message recently, that the ARPA, Infrastructure and Inflation Reduction Act funds are transformative. And these are going to have a huge impact. And my ask to Speaker Tate was Genesee County and the Flint and Flint suburbs need a seat at the table. And I want to be that point person to make sure that we're bringing those projects to Genesee County that are not only going to make our community better more broadly, but we make some of those changes when it comes to how we treat workers and uplifting organized labor, that we're not only going to be building projects that support and uplift everyone, we're also going to make sure the workers who are working on those projects are treated fairly and getting a decent wage as well.
Yeah, and return reward to work. It's always been my frame. Mm-hmm. You know, and I say this about every president or every administration that comes in. I hope that they are the party, the politician, the administration that returns reward to work. And one of the things that I see that you guys are looking at doing is increasing the earned income tax credit. Mm-hmm. Look, if you have a job, you should be able to not just support, get by, just the basics. You should be able to have a little bit better. Like over 100 years ago, you had textile workers in Massachusetts, you know, fighting the Bread and Roses strike, saying, yes, we want bread. We want to be able to sustain ourselves, but we want some nice things too. We want roses too. I can't believe here we are over 100 years later, still having to say that.
Yeah, in the EITC, which actually Governor Whitmer came and met with members of our House Democrats caucus, and she said she wants to change some of the messaging instead of EITC, which is just another acronym that we have to do, talking about it being a working families tax credit, talking about how in the past 50 or 60 years, this has been one of single most important anti-poverty policies that we've had at the federal level, and making sure that we're mirroring what's going on there at the state level as well. And so you're absolutely right. That was another part of the first six bills that we introduced on Wednesday, and is really setting the stage for the kind of priorities that we're going to have, which is fundamentally comes back down to how are we going to help working families.
You know, and the weird thing is most of my conservative listeners and friends would be shocked to know that Ronald Reagan was instrumental in bringing the earned income tax credit, because it was someone who believed in work. And now we've got Republicans who at every turn are beating people over the head who are using this and need this. It's disgraceful where we've seen things. Now, I know my Republican friends, you know, whenever they hear the word tax, they foam at the mouth like Pavlovian dogs. Yeah. But you know, you're actually talking about doing something positive on taxes as well, but helping seniors and not just rich people.
Yes, absolutely. And that was a wonderful transition, by the way. In terms of what we're going to do on tax policies. So the pension tax in Michigan, which was introduced under the Snyder administration, is one of the most unpopular policies I've ever encountered. Just about every day on doors when I was campaigning in my primary and in my general, I always started out by asking folks what was on their mind and what issues mattered most to them. And almost every single day I heard about this pension tax. And the way that this system is set up, it's so convoluted. It can depend on private or public sector. Certain industries are exempted. A certain aspect of it is based on age, where if you're born after a certain time, you don't get taxed. If you're born under a certain age, you aren't. And most states do not have, number one, they don't have this sort of pension tax system. Number two, they don't have such a convoluted way. And the repeal that we're looking at, which is just a straight repeal, we've only had this on the books for a decade. It produces about $500 million in revenue, but that's less than 0.5% of our last budget. So we are going to be repealing the pension tax, which is something, again, that Democrats and Republicans should be able to agree upon. But it's not going to make us go into the red. This tax is so poorly designed that it's high enough that it's screwing over working families and seniors. But it's not generating enough money to where it's going to prevent us from doing any of the policies or public works that we want to pursue. So it's one of the most unpopular policies in Michigan. I expect that while we have a lot of partisan bickering in Lansing, this is going to pass by huge bipartisan margins. And it's just showing that when you show up knocking on doors, when you listen to people, when they bring you into their life and they tell you what issues matter most to them, that it's important that we show that Democrats deliver.
Yeah, and deliver for working people. This is the reality. And this is, you know, because we hear so often that, well, there's no difference between Democrats and Republicans. They're all the same. You've heard this. They're all corrupt. They're all the same. The reality is you guys are showing the way by actually going to get something done. And you got to get it done. We can't just talk about the rhetoric. We can't just say, oh, this is great. You got to get it done.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, again, it goes back to, Speaker Joe Tate is, I said this at our roundtable we did at Building Trades. If you go to Lansing and you ask people, you know, what do they think of Joe Tate? You're going to find folks that might disagree with him, might not see eye to eye with him. That's partially because he's 6'6", so it's hard to look him in the eyes. But nobody is going to say that he is not one of the kindest folks you've met, one of the most competent folks, and one of the hardest working. So we have phenomenal leadership in the House. We have phenomenal leadership in the Senate. And of course, when it comes to Governor Whitmer and the Gretchen, Governor Whitmer in the governor's seat as well.
Yeah, when you said Joe Tate, immediately my mind went to Joe Tate, the former basketball announcer for the Cavaliers in Cleveland. That's where my mind went. But he wasn't 6'6". As soon as you said 6'6", I go, no, Joe Tate wasn't 6'6".
Yeah.
But no, this is good.
All-State Joe Tate. He played for MSU, which was my alma mater, so go green. He also briefly played in the NFL. Veteran, business owner, just really, really remarkable person.
Well, let's hope you guys get this done. And as you're going down this road, I hope you'll come back and share some more thoughts with us. And maybe we can get some help and get some reinforcements to get this done, because working people need you. Get out there and fight for us, Jasper.
Thank you. And once again, thank you so much for not just having me on, but fighting for the right priorities. We were talking a little bit before the show started, you know, just things that we were interested in and what issues aligned with who. And every time you listed off something, went, oh, that's what I think. That's what I think. So I think I'm a Rick Smith Democrat. I think that's how I'll end this.
There you go. Jasper, I appreciate the time, man. Thanks so much.
Thank you, sir. Hope to talk again soon.
Absolutely. Good stuff. Jasper Martis. Representative from Michigan. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. If If you're a fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in Two segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible two-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Tell you, I really like that kid. I think he's going to go far. Smart and on the right side of the issues. And, you know, we met him in Flint. His mother operates the farmer's market there in Flint, which is a fabulous, fabulous place. And look, you know, all the stuff we had heard about Flint, and, you know, it's depressed and all this, we went and we found some of the just the nicest people, some of the most hardworking people, some of the most genuine and generous people that you're ever going to meet. Smart policy could make that community just thrive again. But it comes down to the jobs. It comes down to those jobs that are there paying the kind of wages that made that community great once. So my MAGA friends who wearing the red hats, you know, take that off, put on a hard hat, rebuild that community, bring those kind of jobs back that had the kind of prosperity that union contracts gave, the kind of job security that families were able to have, the kind of local economy that was able to thrive and create jobs. That's what we need to be talking about. Not idiotic, they're taking my stove. How moronic. They took my light bulb. They don't want me to. AOC is going to take my hamburger, going to make me eat plants. If that were true, I'd be marching with you. It's not happening, though. Not happening. And this is where, and I love the fact that we're talking about the economic message, and this is where Democrats better get back to the wheelhouse. The wheelhouse is, and James Carville was not wrong, it's the economy, stupid. And this is where this is my true north. All of the other things aside, you know, the gender identity stuff, all of the culture issue stuff, all that stuff aside, look, I believe I'm on the right side of it. It's not a government issue. It's not even a you issue. It's an individual issue. That life, liberty, pursuit of one's happiness, that's that. None of my business. Don't care. But I want to make sure that everybody, regardless of where they find themselves, has an opportunity to lead a good life, lead their best life. And we do that through economics. We do that by sharing prosperity. Now, the story today that caught my attention, that it's one of those kind of, I hate taking joy out of other people's demise, but there's a song, one of my favorite bands when I was a kid, the Michael Stanley Band. There was a song that he sang, one of the lyrics was, you better know the way back down as you're climbing your way to the top. Or as you're climbing your way to the top, you better know the way back down. Elon Musk has set a Guinness World Record for the largest loss of personal fortune in history, about $182 billion. Now, don't get all crazy. He didn't actually lose them. It's just share values that eventually will probably turn back around because rich people understand this. It's not like he's out on the street corner selling pencils. I may take great joy in that, but that's not what we're seeing. He's not on the ledge about to jump. He is going to be just fine. He's not worried about if his kids are going to eat. He's not worried about if the rent's due. He's not worried about the electric bill. So let's not get all carried away But on paper, he's lost a boatload of money. I keep coming back to, we cannot have these kind of gazillionaires have this kind of outweighed power. Again, back to policy. Smart taxation. I'm a big fan of the earned income tax credit. Big fan of helping out. Problem is, we got a lot of corporations like the big arch place who takes advantage of that. Like the Wally World place takes advantage of that. That's why we need to have smart policy and stronger unions. Just my thought. Want to hear yours? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back after that.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News Special Report. Lisa Marie Presley has died at 54. Her mother, Priscilla, says that the only child of Elvis Presley died after being rushed to an L.A. area hospital today. A rep tells CBS News she suffered cardiac arrest. CBS's Elise Preston.
Just days ago, on the red carpet, Lisa Marie Presley praised Austin Butler for his Golden Globe winning portrayal of her father, Elvis Presley, in the film Elvis.
It was mind-blowing.
Lisa Marie Presley was a singer. CBS News Sunday Morning asked Presley in 2005 if it was daunting launching a singing career, being the daughter of Elvis.
I don't think I noticed how much, what a mountain that was going to be to climb until I was climbing it. Uh-huh. And I got, you know, a quarter of the way up the hill and went, oh my God, you know, I have to now answer to so many things. And that's the hard part.
The mother of four lost her son Benjamin to suicide in 2020. CBS News Special Report, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
WAUK 540 AM. Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matney with your headlines. Wisconsin's Republican lawmakers want therapists, social workers, and counselors to be able to try and change their LGBTQ patients' gender identities and sexual orientation, also known as conversion therapy. At least 20 states have outlawed conversion therapy for minors. Research shows the practice can increase the risk of suicide and depression. A ban on conversion therapy passed in 2020, but a committee in the GOP-controlled legislature temporarily blocked it and is expected to do the same today. Black and Hispanic voters in Milwaukee angry over an elected official bragging about lowering black and brown turnout in the last election. A Republican member of Wisconsin's Bipartisan Elections Commission, Robert Spindell, sent an email last month saying Republicans can be proud that 37,000 less votes were cast in overwhelmingly black and Hispanic areas. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit wesaysaveit.org. That's wesaysaveit.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio. Dana Perry. Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
It is the Monday after the first Packers game, and I think everyone right now is licking their wounds.
But I do love that you're leading with The Bears Still Suck as the intro song. I mean, we're already on to week two.
Why are we not good at the season opener?
Listen to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry right here on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
To get inside.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So on Tuesday, the U.S. Supreme Court heard the Glacier versus Teamsters Local 174 case. We've been talking about it all week. The reality is this is another one of the death of a thousand paper cuts. Only I fear this court is accelerating their attacks on working people in a way that's, well, going to take the right of the striking away, especially as we've seen a rise in the number of people saying, you know what, we've had enough. We're coming out of the pandemic where they told us we were essential. We were frontline heroes. And now you got the Fed raising interest rates to cause higher unemployment. And now the Supreme Court taking the one tool that workers have to fight for better wages, hours, and conditions away. And do you think this is by accident? Of course not. This was part of the plan. And here to share some thoughts on what was going on with the case and how this is going to affect organized labor and workers here in our country. I've asked my good friend Ian Millhiser to come share some thoughts. Ian is the senior correspondent over at Vox. He's got a new piece out. The Supreme Court hears a case this week that endangers workers' ability to strike. He's also the author of a fabulous book, highly suggested, called The Agenda, How Republican Supreme Court is Reshaping America. This was written before many of the attacks. Pretty clairvoyant, worth the read. But Ian, thanks for taking time for us.
It's good to be here. Thanks so much.
So let's start with this case. This should never, look, you're the legal expert here. I've had lawyers and legal experts tell me this case should have never been taken by the Supreme Court. Never in a million years should this have been taken. Why? Why are they taking this now?
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised that they took it because, like, as I dug into the law, it's just clear that there's one clear answer in this case under existing law. So the issue here is, first of all, federal law protects the right to strike. But there are some limits on that. Like, for the most part, like, if you leave your job and it causes some of the company's product to spoil, you know, tough. The company has to deal with that. But if you, like, walk off the job and, like, smash the machines, that's not allowed. If right. you walk off the job, like, there was one case involving a lead foundry where the workers left molten lead in a state where it could have injured people. That's not allowed. So there are extreme cases where you have to take precautions. And what the Supreme Court has said is that if there's any doubt about whether a strike is allowed or not, then first, the NLRB is supposed to hear the case. The NLRB is supposed to decide whether or not, you know, the strike was allowed. If this, if the NLRB says the strike was allowed, that's it. That's the end of any litigation that, right. that can happen. What this case is trying to do is essentially bypass that whole process and allow the company to sue a union in state court before the NLRB has done its job. And the reason why that's troubling is it's basically just a way to drain the finances of unions. You know, it can put unions in a position where you're having to pay your lawyers to fight a fight in the NLRB, and you're also having to pay your lawyers to fight a totally different lawsuit in state court. You know, the state court fight could go on for years, and then the NLRB could rule, and all that litigation could be for nothing. And again, like, the only reason why you would want two simultaneous lawsuits going on is if you are an employer and your thinking is, well, we've got a ton of money and the union doesn't have a lot of money, so we can just file all these lawsuits, grind the union down with legal fees. I mean, we're going to have to pay our lawyers too, but it costs us less to pay the lawyers than we're going to have to pay if we just agree to a fair contract.
Yeah, we just write that off as a business expense and take it from the workers' wages. So they're literally going to pay for their own demise. We're
exactly.
literally putting a kick me sign on their, writing the kick me sign, and they're putting it on their own backs is what you're saying.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the idea here. I mean, like, the one of the theories, I mean, this is in the National Labor Relations Act, is that there is an imbalance of power between workers and employers. There's an imbalance of power between unions and employers. I mean, I'm in a union. It's a good, strong union. We don't have anywhere near the kind of money that my employer does. And so if there aren't safeguards to prevent, you know, to prevent employers from bigfooting workers, from bigfooting unions, it's just, you know, even if you theoretically have the right to strike, you know, that right starts to mean very little when your union can't afford it, or when like the union has to take the money that would have gone to a strike fund and has to spend it on legal fees because there's this parallel lawsuit going on.
Yeah, but this is, again, you know, and I said this the other day, this is another example of corporate America, again, going after unions in a way just to keep them spinning their wheels and defending themselves. You know, right. You know, if it was going after, you know, fighting right to no rights at work laws, if it's going after fighting for unemployment, and you know, go down the list of things, the attacks that have happened. So what that means is those unions don't have those resources to go out and organize new members. They don't have that money to go and represent their current members, let alone strike and fight for better conditions and wages and hours and all that. So this is a perfect tool for corporate America to neuter labor even further.
That's right. And, you know, and the thing about it is like what the company is asking for doesn't even make sense just from a perspective of like, if you're trying to run the government, like why, if you're just, you know, thinking about like, how should the judiciary operate? Would you want a situation where you essentially have two different really expensive legal proceedings going on at the same time? You know, that makes no sense. Like, you know, when I have a dispute with someone, if it has to go to court, there should be one court proceeding.
Isn't this them saying, look, we don't want to deal with the NLRB, and the Supreme Court has had a hatred of government oversight for a very long time. So this is corporate America going, how do we quickly get to that Supreme Court that hates government agencies and government oversight, get into a friendly arena that may give us the ability to win this, what is a fairly, maybe you can correct me, but a fairly narrow kind of victory that I fear could open up to a much larger kind of scenario down the road of not just lost cement, but lost future profits.
Right. Yeah. So let's talk about what this case is actually about. So there was a cement company. The strike was timed to begin at a time when like some cement had already been mixed and was still in the trucks. So like there was wet cement in the trucks. The workers, you know, they didn't hurt the trucks. They didn't like hide the trucks somewhere. You know, they brought the trucks back to the company's lot.
They kept left them running.
Yep. So the Senate wouldn't. But like, basically, it cost the company some money because they had this wet cement they couldn't do anything with because they didn't have any workers who could, you know, who could do anything with
it. And management's useless. They don't know how to run the machinery.
Right. And like this process of like strikes, or for that matter, lockouts, you know, being timed at a time that like causes economic damage to the other side. I mean, that's just how it works. You, yep. You know, I mean, think about like a baseball strike. Like, you know, if there's a baseball strike, if the workers are striking, they'll try to time it so it's right before the World Series, because then the company feels pressure to agree because they want the World Series to happen. If it's a lockout, if it's initiated by management, it'll start in the off season, because in the off season, management would love to not have to pay its workers. And like, that's just normal. Right. I mean, that is how labor disputes work. Like the person who starts, whether it is a strike or a lockout, they pick it at the time that is most advantageous to them. That's what you do. And the theory behind this lawsuit is it would take a lot of that ability to time strikes away from unions. It wouldn't take away management's ability to time a lockout. You know, management would still be able to time that lockout whenever it wanted to. And on top of that, I mean, you know, a lot of it depends on what type of shop you're talking about and what type of industry you're talking about. But, you know, the whole point of a strike is to cause economic harm to the employer. There's always going to be some lost profits about a strike, you know, whenever a strike happens. And if all of a sudden you're going to make the union liable for that, I mean, first of all, it just nukes the unions. And second of all, why is management going to deal? Like, why are they going to come to a deal?
Never.
Yeah, if the union can't impose some sort of economic consequence on them.
Because nobody, look, you know, I say this all the time. Nobody wants to go on strike. Nobody's, you know, wishing and hoping, oh boy, we get to go on strike. It is the last arrow in the quiver. But when you pull that arrow out, you better hit your target, because it's like, you know, you've pushed the button. And you've got to get what you need. And this it's meant to shock the system to get people back to the table and negotiating in good faith to hammer out a deal, because the hope is that the other side goes, no, I don't want the economic pain and catastrophe that's coming. We're gonna actually come to a good deal. If you take the power of labor to do this, and then you put a cost on it to where workers are bearing all of the risk, the responsibility, and none of the reward, yeah, I mean, we're screwed.
Yeah. And I mean, and to be clear, we're talking about an additional cost here. I've been on strike before, and like, you know, my union, like, you know, I literally just started a job when we went on strike, and my union was very good to me. Like, they gave me bags of food because I hadn't got a paycheck yet, so I could still feed myself. Like, you know, there are all kinds of costs for workers already. Yep. When you're striking, you lose your salary, you know, the union has to come up with a strike fund. There's just all kinds of costs that go into that. The more cost you layer on top of it, like, you're just weakening the union and empowering the employer.
Now, you're listening to The Rick Smith Show with Ian Millhiser. He's a senior correspondent over at Vox. You want to check out their work, vox.com. He's got his piece out right now. The Supreme Court hears a case this week that endangers workers' ability to strike. We'll get links out on social media how you can read his piece. It's really one of the best ones out there. Highly suggested. Now, I've said that, you know, there's going to be, when this goes the way I fear it goes, there will be an immediate chilling effect. It won't be as great right away, I don't think. I think the next series of cases, because I believe there will be next ones that'll expand this, because this is just about the cement and the loss of that. I think they really want, you know, lost profits. And I look at, you know, like down at Warrior Met Coal, or I look at the Ingredion strike we talked about last night on the program and the millions of dollars that they've lost. This is one of those things where you go, well, we've lost profits, so now you're going to have to pay for it because you withheld your labor, basically turning workers into, I don't know, I'm not going to use the slave word, but indentured servants seems pretty safe.
Yeah, like, I mean, the one right that we all have, I mean, this is the 13th Amendment. That's the anti-slavery amendment. Like, the one right that we all have is to not work for zero pay. Like, I mean, that's an option that anyone has at any time. I cannot work. I won't get paid for it, but I can choose not to work. That's, you know, that's one thing that we all have. And when you start chipping away at that, I mean, not only do you eventually cross a line where it starts to have constitutional implications, but it's just, I mean, that's just the only power that workers have. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, you know, you can talk about like different kinds of job actions. You can talk about different ways that like unions try to exercise power. But the thing that it all comes back to is that the one thing that a worker already has is they have the ability to say, well, if it comes down to it, I'm going to not work. And, you know, if that's not an option, what do unions have?
Yeah. And that you're going to get even more punished outside of the lost wages. And because, look, employers, the first thing you do when you go on strike is they take your health care, they cut you off, you have no access to benefits, any of that stuff. So the economic pain is already there. This just is going to add another layer onto this. Now, what's interesting for me, Ian, is I've got a lot of friends who are big Trump supporters. And, you know, Trump was a good labor guy, and, you know, Trump was a good union guy. They believe this to their core. Their issue, a lot of them, was, you know, Roe, and okay, if that's your thing, this court has done what you wanted to do. They've overturned Roe. You got your wet dream wish done there. Now they're overturning the right of workers to strike, and I eventually think down the road to organize at some point. The Trump justices, how bad have they been for working people? Because, you know, I keep making this argument to people that Trump is not labor friendly. He was never a worker's friend, no matter what the rhetoric of bringing manufacturing back or infrastructure, or any, no matter what the rhetoric was, his actions and his legacy are going to be horribly negative. I'm curious your thoughts.
Yeah. So there have been two really big labor cases since Trump became president. One was the Janus case. I mean, this was a massive one. And I think this was when the only Trump justice on the court was Gorsuch, but, you know, he voted against the unions in it. And that was the case that essentially applied a right-to-work regime to every public sector union in the country. So, you know, if you're a firefighter, if you're a teacher, if you're a cop, if you're any kind of unionized government worker, what this said is that there's now a right-to-work regime, which means that the union can't collect fees from non-members for the services it provides to those non-members. You know, it is essentially having to bargain on their behalf and, like, litigate grievances on their behalf and do all the other things that unions do for these non-members for free. So that's what the Janus case said. The second case, which wasn't as big of a deal as Janus, but is still a big deal, was the Cedar Point case out of California. This case, California had a rule saying that farm workers unions, like, there were all kinds of rules saying when you had to do it and, like, what sort of notice you had to provide. But, like, basically
they didn't allow them to come on the property anymore, if I remember right. There used to be the ability to go and talk to those workers and to organize, and they completely undid that. They completely, you know, gutted that. And it's just another one of those moments where you go, you know, it's not that egregious of a violation for worker organizations to talk to workers. But, you know, they tried to argue that, you know, these unions were taking these people's property or stealing their property by having access to the workers who work in those farms and then those fields. And that's the part that's, you know, again, remarkable to me, how far this court will go and how far that they'll use the power of this court to put down workers and their ability to bargain and their ability to make a better life. It's going to get worse. Understand, these are incremental steps. This case, this Glacier case, I think is a step in getting us toward, like I said, the ultimate goal. If they get what they want, if a union dare go on strike, they're going to be able to collect all their potential lost profits. And let your mind start thinking about that for a minute. And what kind of a chilling effect is that going to have? And if you think that wages have been declining and stagnant for the last 40 years as the number of strikes declined and worker power was eroded, when they get this kind of control, you're never going to see a raise. Never. You know, I was just having a conversation the other day with a younger guy, and I said, look, when I started in the industry that I was in, it was 85% unionized. 85% unionized. And back then, we were making, in today's dollars, top rate, over $40 an hour. Today, this job pays about a little over 26, almost 27. Where'd the rest of that money go? From the, you know, the 45 to the 27, where'd that $18 an hour go? It's not in my pocket. It's not in my coworker's pocket. Where'd that money go? Where did those wages go? And it's not just, you know, I'm talking about one job in one industry. Multiply that across all of the jobs in all of the industries and think about the billionaire class that we have created, the massive billionaire class that we've created, the amount of wealth that's been extracted from working people and handed to our billionaires. Let it sink in for a minute. So when I talk about having a much higher tax code, when I talk about having a much higher corporate tax code, higher individual tax code, when I talk about this stuff, it's about distributing the wealth of this nation in an equitable way. It's about ensuring that workers have a share in the wealth that their labor creates. It's about being sure that you have an opportunity, I don't know, to lead a better life. It's that simple for me. I do want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. I want to thank Ian Millhiser for coming to talk with us. Again, check out his book, The Agenda, How a Republican Supreme Court is Reshaping America. Really well worth the read. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1932. A very unusual army marched on Washington, D.C. Pro-labor Catholic priest Father James Renshaw Cox led the march. Father Cox had worked as a cab driver and steel worker before attending seminary and serving as a chaplain in World War I. After the war, as a pastor in Pittsburgh, he organized food assistance for those hit hard by the Great Depression. As the number of unemployed grew, Father Cox came up with a new plan to help the suffering in his city. He organized Cox's army. 25,000 Pennsylvanians who had lost their job due to the Great Depression. Cox led them from Pennsylvania to the nation's capital to demand a works program. Cox led them from Pennsylvania to the nation's capital to demand a public works program to put people back to work. The protest was the largest in Washington, D.C. up until that time. It was considered a great embarrassment to Republican President Herbert Hoover. Yet the president still did not move to provide government assistance. Such inaction helped to usher in the era of Democrat Franklin Delano Roosevelt's presidency, whose New Deal policies included public jobs programs. The protest also spawned a popular saying for women of that day. According to the Associated Press, the men of Cox's army ate 2,500 pounds of sauerkraut, 1,500 pounds of hot dogs, 11,000 apples, 650 gallons of soup, 450 loaves of bread, and 1,600 dozen of donuts and rolls during the protest. When cooking dinner for their families, women might explain, "I made just enough food to feed Cox's army." Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com. Like us on Facebook and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. So, look. At the end of this, the Supreme Court, our court, I hate calling it a Supreme Court, the highest court in the land, the court that we've given so much power to, is, as we speak, abusing that power. And it's going to get worse. They are reshaping this country in the conservative wet dream model. Every bad idea, everything that the Federalist Society, the Chamber of Commerce, everything corporate America has dreamt of in their think tanks, we're moving towards. And they're going to put it into law. So if you have these visions of, you know, hey, my grandparents, they were able to work, you know, a job and retire with security and dignity. And, you know, they were able to do all of these things. That's not going to be the future. It's not. They are going to change the shape of this nation in ways that I fear in a decade will make, you know, where, when I grew up, unrecognizable. And I fear for the children. I fear for my kids in the future, because the world we're going to is this this Ayn Randian kind of Hunger Games kind of world, where if you're wealthy and powerful, it's going to be a great place. If you're one of the, well, working people, not so much. And you know, I struggle with this future. Because, again, we're really moving in this direction. You know, this going back to the Hobbesian thought of life being nasty, brutish, and short for the working class. I mean, we really are heading in those directions. And the what's amazing to me is the media structure is really doing a masterful job of pitting workers against each other with this, you know, nobody wants to work anymore kind of frame. And it's not new. They've been saying this for generations. You know, the next generation, nobody wants to work like our generation. We're so much better than that. And then, you know, the generation before us said the same thing, and the generation before them, and then before them, and before them. You know how this goes. The reality is, I think the younger generation, they got it right. They're actually waking up. They've watched their parents get ground down to nothing. They've watched the standard of living get worse. They've watched how corporate America has dominated their families and their communities. And you know what? They're not interested. So for me, this is there's a moment of hope here, but there's a moment of concern, because while there's hope in the younger people, the machinery, the establishment, our high court, the six dictators in robes, they have a different vision of what this country is and what it's going to be for you, working people like you and me. We should be very afraid of that. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you get yours, you'll find ours. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha.